the context of normal eating in adolescence is very different to normal eating in younger children. There is increased independence from family, greater wealth, with greater opportunities then for young people themselves to be making independent food choices outside their parental control. The content of meals across adolescence also greatly changes, not just in terms of what we know about skipping breakfast and having skipping meals and having more snacks, but a much higher energy content, which on one hand is appropriate in terms of the early adolescent growth spurts. Young people do need a lot of energy for that, but many young people these days are getting way above their normal or recommended daily intakes. So what are eating disorders? They don't arise out of the blue and they don't come from Mars. They are on a spectrum from normal eating through to dieting, through to subclinical disorders and then diagnosable clinical conditions. And it's interesting to think when we look at on the left here that notion of what's normal eating, when we appreciate how few young people commonly experience hunger and how hard it is for young people to recognise body, if you like, experiences of hunger versus satiety or feeling full. But it's actually really important that young people have such experiences. Dieting, arguably, is becoming simply normal, but the ways that adolescents diet are typically very unhealthy and certainly aren't effective in terms of losing weight for the majority of those, and 60% of girls and about 40% of boys suggest they are on a diet at any one stage. So this notion that young people have typically of wanting to eat in a healthier way, which is the typical entry point into clinical eating disorders, for many of them is very appropriate. But young people, just like they take dieting messages to extreme, similarly take these notions of what healthy eating is absolutely to extreme forms and find it very hard to understand what is appropriate and what is not. The importance of subclinical eating disorders is that we know there's very rapid movement in and out of mild, if you like, eating disorders. So when we look at epidemiological studies and study young people at six-monthly intervals, as we've done at the Centre for Adolescent Health, the group of young people who have subclinical eating disorders at any six-monthly interval is completely different to the group that have them the next time. A lot of movement into clinical eating disorders. So if dieting is so common, what's the sort of dieting that really concerns us? The dieting that is most worrying is dieting when it's associated with decreasing weight goals. So rather than deciding that I want to lose 3 kilograms and I'm going to be really happy and go out and celebrate that and let everyone I know that I've been successful in losing weight, as is healthy weight loss, dangerous dieting is when it's associated with ever decreasing weight goals, when it's associated with feeling worse about the body, when it's associated with greater self-criticism, and particularly in adolescents and women, when it's associated with loss of menstruation. What are other, if you like, red flags for eating disorders? I've put up a list here, but particularly it's cooking for others but not eating oneself. Development of rituals or obsessions about particular food types, limiting the range of foods. Obviously, concerns about large amounts of fluid or frequent visits to the bathroom, potentially signalling vomiting, but becoming increasingly focused on body size and shape. To the point that when these behaviours become persistent and relentlessly pursued over time, it turns into then what we would then name clinically as an eating disorder. When it becomes a means of control, when it's associated with other comorbid issues like severe depression, when it becomes completely driven, relentless, overwhelms anything else in a young person's life.